your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Just win.
Your team
just
every
win.
Day.
Just win.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash, with a silver hat about his head, and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
What up, Raider Nation? Welcome into Friday's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast, April 3rd, 2020. Your boy Q here finishing off a really, really good week, a really fun week here on the podcast. Also had a really good week on my radio show on ESPN Central Texas. I'm sure not everyone tunes in to ESPN Central Texas, but if you do and you tuned in on Thursday, you probably heard a really good interview that I'm very, very proud of. Terrell Owens, Hall of Famer, T.O., 49ers, Eagles, Cowboys. He was with the Bills, the Bengals, and he was on our show on Thursday. Had about 20 good minutes with T.O. Thought that that was really, really cool. And I know he has nothing to do with the Raiders, but I was really, really proud of that interview. I was able to land that just by, matter of fact, tweeting. I actually tweeted at him after I did the little driveway sit-up challenge that he had put out a few days ago for the COVID-19. He had done the sit-up challenge, 19 sit-ups. So me and my guys on my radio show, Ward Whites and Steven Simcox, we all did the challenge. And if you follow me on Twitter at your boy Q254, you've probably seen the video by now. Anyway, T.O. actually quote tweeted my tweet about it and was like, man, that's the way to get it. You guys are doing a good job. So I just shot my shot. You know my theme, man. You know my motto. You're guaranteed to miss the shots that you don't take. So I took my shot and shot him a DM and said, hey, man, we'd love to have you on the radio here on ESPN Central Texas. We'd love to get you on. Central Texas would love to hear from you and everything. And boom, he hit me back and was like, all right, cool, let me know. So I shot him the number to call. And the very first day, actually, he was supposed to call on Wednesday, and he didn't call. So everyone kind of thought that, ah, Q's goofing. Q don't know what he's talking about. T.O., you know, stiffed him. And then right after the show on Wednesday, T.O. hit me and was like, yeah, my bad, I missed the show, but I'll hit you on Thursday. I'll be on the show. What time? Give me a time. And so I gave him a time. And sure enough, man, he called right on the dot, 12:30 Central Time, and we talked for a good 20, 22 minutes on the air. It was great stuff. So really, really proud of that, being able to land that interview. I thought it was great. And if you follow me on Twitter at your boy Q254, we tweet out all our interviews, so you can check that out and listen to it if you want. A lot of good stuff. Even though I know it's not Raider related, it was still a lot of good stuff. So let's get to some stuff that is Raider related. Coming up on today's show, segment number 3, it all depends on how it's going to shake out. It all depends, because I'm thinking about calls and texts and tweets. You know, Locked On Raider podcast, voicemail line 707-654-4693. It's always wide open like some TV antennas. You know how I get down. But I also have an interview coming up with Tommy Call 3. He's on 95.7 The Game. He writes for him. He also does a show there, and he talks NFL draft. And so I'm definitely going to be talking to him in just a few. And I guarantee that that's going to hold down segment number 2 for sure. But it may also carry over to segment number 3. So I might not have any calls. I might not have any texts or tweets. But then again, I might. It all depends on how the interview goes in a little bit with Tommy Call 3. But here in segment number 1, I'll definitely have the news and the notes of the day. And there's a lot of good news to get to. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. I think the biggest and the best news for the Raiders that came down on Thursday, it came down later in the evening, was that the Raiders and former Saints defensive back Eli Apple were unable to finalize a contract, so Eli Apple remains a free agent. He is no longer going to be a member of the Las Vegas Raiders, and I think everyone knows how I feel. If you've listened to this podcast even one time, and you've heard me talk about Eli Apple, you know that he was not my favorite signing that the Raiders had. Matter of fact, that was the one signing that they made, or agreement that they came to at least during free agency, that I did not like. Eli Apple has just not been a good defensive back the whole time he's been in the league. The Giants drafted him number 10 overall. I thought he was a product of just a really good team at Ohio State. Thought that he was drafted way too high. The Giants shipped him off to New Orleans. He was a member of the Saints, and he had moments where he was okay, and then he just had other moments where he got picked on. He created a lot of penalties. He just wasn't very good. And so when I saw the news that the Raiders came to an agreement with him for a free agent contract, and they gave him a pretty nice amount of money, I was pretty upset. And again, I'm not going to be super angry where I'm cussing the team or anything like that, because they had a really good free agency. And I really do like the direction that the team is going. I think the front office is very, very smart. So I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. Hey, if you got Eli Apple, you like him, you think that he can work really well in Paul Gunther's system, fine. I'll go ahead and swallow the pride and not really talk too bad about it. I'll let it be known that I don't like him. But at the same time, I'm not going to just sit here and be and moan about it. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to throw a fit about it just because. I mean, it was only one guy, and I thought the rest of free agency was really, really good. But then to come to find out a few days later, it was probably like a week or so, a little bit later, that they're unable to come to a contract agreement, and they move on from Eli Apple, thrilled. If I knew how to do a backflip, Raider Nation, I would do a backflip. But since I don't, and if I tried, I'd go back and bust my tail. I'm not going to do that. But man, oh man, very excited about that. And please believe, I'm going to let it be known right now, don't think it's any kind of coincidence that all of a sudden guys like Dre Kirkpatrick, who have a very long, familiar history with Paul Gunther, the defensive coordinator for the Raiders, because all of a sudden he's been released by the Bengals, and there's other guys out there as well that are available that probably can come a lot cheaper as well. I don't think that that's a coincidence, Raider Nation. I would not be shocked. I would not be surprised to see Dre Kirkpatrick end up becoming a member of the Raiders. I really would not be shocked. I talked about Kirkpatrick the other day. He was the guy that was selected in the first round with the pick from the Raiders because of Carson Palmer and the Bengals trade, that ridiculous trade that Hugh Jackson ended up making. But yeah, I would not be surprised to see him suiting up in the silver and black next year and being in Pauly G's system, because again, he really, really knows him. People hit me up and asked about Logan Ryan. I don't think Logan Ryan, who's a Tennessee Titan right now, he's still out there on the free agent market. I don't think he's the guy that they're looking at, because I just think he wants too much money. But Kirkpatrick makes all the sense in the world. He'll be cheaper. He's a veteran. So at some point, you know, a young dude could come in if they draft a guy early, or even if they just draft a guy, period, a young guy could come in and take that spot. But at the same time, he could hold it down, and he knows Pauly G's system, knows what Paul wants. And, you know, he could be a solid piece of, you know, masking tape, you know, duct tape for now. Can hold it together for a while until it's time to pass the torch on to the young dude. And I could totally see that happening sooner rather than later. But very good news to see that Eli Apple will not be a member of the Raiders. I am thrilled about that. And keeping the good news moving, and this is about someone who is going to be a member of the Silver and Black. It was announced on Thursday that the Raiders are bringing back guard Jordan Devey. He started 4 games last season, and then he was lost with a torn pec. He filled in really, really nice for Richie Incognito, the left guard, when he was suspended for the first 2 games of the season. Then he started the next 2 games. Once Richie came back, he moved over to the right guard position and filled in for Gabe Jackson while he was out with his injury for a couple games. So this guy is very versatile. He can hold down the left or the right guard position. I think that's very critical. You saw how much it meant to the Raiders in 2019. It puts a lot of guards in that offensive line room. I mean, you got Richie Incognito starting left guard, Gabe Jackson starting right guard for now, Denzel Good, he's good quality backup, Jordan Devey, good quality backup, Eric Kush, he's actually the new guy on the block. I mean, he wasn't with the Raiders last year, and then Lester Cotton, remember they brought him up from the practice squad. So you got 6 guards right there: Incognito, Jackson, Good, Devey, Kush, and Cotton. So that's a lot, but only really one of them is new, and that's in Kush. So we'll see what the Raiders end up doing. I'm still not 100% sold that Gabe Jackson's going to be on the team in 2020. I know he's a key cog on that offensive line, but again, with the success that the Raiders had in 2019 while Gabe Jackson was out, I could totally see them saying, you know what, we can save a little bit of money by moving on from this guy and having Devey or Good or a combination of the both fill in that spot and hold it down. I would not be shocked if they did that and then also dipped into the draft and got them another guy, a younger guy, a cheaper guy, because that's what the name of the game is, man. That's how the game goes. I mean, you get a guy on a high price contract and you can find some young quality depth behind them and they fill in nicely. That's what happens, man. When you get injured and a guy comes in and fills in really nicely and your offensive line really doesn't miss a beat, then boom, that's kind of like the first step to being out the door. So I'm not saying Gabe Jackson is gone, but I've been saying it for quite a while that I would not be shocked if the Raiders decided to move on from him, if they traded him somewhere to a guard needy team, or if they just flat out cut him just to save the money. But either way, right now as it stands, Richie Incognito, Gabe Jackson, Denzel Good, Jordan Devey, Eric Kush, and Lester Cotton all in the offensive line room, and the Raiders really could keep them all. So, I mean, I'm not saying that they have to get rid of somebody, but they could absolutely keep them all. Another piece of news and note that I wanted to bring to you is just a kind of stat from Pro Football Focus, and I know all stats aren't all that, and I know Pro Football Focus, sometimes they're hit and miss, but, you know, CeeDee Lamb, he's either 1A, 1B, or 1C, whatever you're looking at. There's a stat that they put out on Thursday I thought was pretty cool. CeeDee Lamb has never dropped a deep pass 20-plus yards in his three seasons at Oklahoma. Now, there's obviously things that play into that. You know, he's dropped the ball before. He dropped the ball against LSU, but there was a holding penalty on that play, so that didn't count. I mean, there's other things that play into that. Also, you know, he didn't have an NFL defensive back all over him either, trying to break up the pass or take the ball the other way either. But just thought it was a kind of cool stat. CeeDee Lamb never dropping a pass, a deep pass, which they consider deep, 20-plus yards in his three seasons at Oklahoma. So it at least shows you that he has really, really sure hands. So I like that. As a matter of fact, I like that a lot. My final piece of news here for segment number one in today's Locked On Raiders podcast is the fact that the league issued a memo that was obtained by NFL Network's Tom Pelissero informing all clubs the two scenarios currently being considered by the NFL as it pertains to this month's draft. The first option is for clubs to operate out of their facilities, which is subject to mandatory health and safety guidelines issued by Dr. Alan Seals, which will include limitations on the number of permitted club personnel at the facility and rigorous cleaning requirements. Which is fine, because most teams send most of their people home. You remember what the Raiders did last year? They sent most of their team home anyway. There was only a select few there. So they could actually do all their operating and all their drafting out of their facilities right there in Alameda, as long as they go through all the cleaning practices, the rigorous cleaning requirements, and it's all checked out, and mandatory health and safety guidelines have to be, they have to be abided by. So that's one option. The second option is for teams to operate completely remotely in personal residences. The NFL is going to decide on either option one or two based on several factors, most notably guidances from Dr. Seals, the CDC, and the impact of any shelter in place or similar executive orders that are imposed in club jurisdictions. Also, the NFL added in that memo that it will not mandate that club personnel move their draft day operations to an alternate offsite location. However, a club may still decide to operate its draft from an offsite location rather than from its facility, provided that such activity is permissible by law and in compliance with the mandatory guidelines, again, issued by Dr. Seals. I don't know if you saw it, but the Saints announced on Wednesday that they planned on setting up their operations in a local brewery that's actually owned by the Benson family in New Orleans, with all staff members spread out in a large room and only being permitted to enter after having their temperature taken. So that's what the Saints plan on doing. I'm sure some teams are going to get creative like that as well, and I'm sure a lot of teams are going to bunker back down at their facilities once it's all checked out and make sure it fits to the health guidelines and all that good stuff laid out by Dr. Seal. So that was the final note that I wanted to get to you here in segment number one. Now I want to jump into my conversation with Tommy Call 3, 95.7 The Game. He writes for him. He has a show on 95.7 The Game, does a really good job talking all things NFL draft. That's up next here on the Locked On Raiders podcast.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joining me now on the phone lines to talk all things NFL draft is my guy, Tommy Call 3. He writes and he has a show on 95.7 The Game in the Bay on Twitter at Tommy_3. And Tommy, man, we chop it up a few times a year. We talk NFL, we talk draft, whatnot, whatever it is. I know you got a real sharp football mind. And off top, just when it comes to this NFL draft, man, who excites you? You know, who is the player that intrigues you the most that you can't wait to see where he goes? Who is it and why?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm going to kind of give you, I hope it's not cliche, but it's Tua, man. It really is. I've been fascinated by Tua for, it seems like, since he first made that throw in the national championship game, you know, to win it all for Alabama. I think this guy personally is one of maybe my favorite quarterbacks I've personally, you know, quote unquote, scouted, watched religiously. I think the gap between him and Joe Burrow is a lot closer than maybe some think. I just think that this guy is fantastic as a quarterback prospect. I know there's injury questions. I do, but I mean, if I'm a general manager with the first overall pick, or if I'm a scout in the room, I'm making an argument for Tua at that. That's how highly I personally think of him. I understand, you know, there's Miami's involved, the Chargers. There's some trade up candidates. I just think that this guy, I'm really fascinated to see where his career goes from here, because I think he could potentially have this Hall of Fame caliber career, or it could be, you know, injuries like we've seen time and time again. I just think that this is a guy that it will be known as, anytime the 2020 draft is discussed, I think Tua's name will be brought up.
How concerned are you with the injury history? Because I like Tua a lot too, but then after the two ankle surgeries and then the hip, of course, that was the big one. But how concerned are you moving forward with him and his durability in the NFL?
I'm concerned for sure. I mean, you have to be, right? I mean, I think that's a conversation every person interested in taking Tua has to weigh. But, you know, Q, the thing with the draft, something I've learned, something that's been passed down to me from, you know, other really talented draft people is you got to take risks, right? The NFL draft is about taking risks. It is a gamble. The surefire thing is never surefire. No matter how right. you know highly graded of a prospect is, there's always going to be the bust factor, right? And I think teams in the NFL make or break by taking those risks. Like think about the Kansas City Chiefs trading up. Like, we all love Patrick Mahomes and think of him as this fantastic quarterback. But when he was coming out, a lot of people had question marks of him. A lot of people were surprised by that move to go up and get him. Well, I think with Tua, the talent is there, but you're going to have to risk it. You know, is he worth the injury factor, right? And I think a team that you know, struggles time and time again with selecting a quarterback, like a Miami Dolphins, you know, a team like that, that's where I think you need to make that risk, right? Because what you're doing doesn't work. And I think Tua, because of the injury concerns, might fall into a team like that where you have to kind of push your chips in. And I think the talent is there enough to, you know, a general manager might lose their job because of it or type of thing. But I think the talent is there. The tape is there where this guy is that talented. But it's a concern, but it's a concern worth taking. It's a risk worth taking, in my personal opinion.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You know, and like I said, I like Tua a lot. That injury, that hip injury really bothered me, but I thought he was going to be an absolute stud. Now, you mentioned earlier how you don't think that there's a whole lot of gap between Joe Burrow and Tua, and a lot of people just have Joe Burrow as the end-all, be-all. Like you mentioned, he's the sure shot. But like you said, there is no really sure shot. So where are your biggest concerns when it comes to Joe Burrow? Because he is penciled in as the number one guy.
Yeah, I think Joe Burrow's fantastic. I mean, I think there's two fantastic quarterbacks in this draft. I think that these guys are billed as the 1-2 guy for a reason. I think Joe Burrow, what he did at LSU, I mean, he's going to be discussed when it comes to college quarterback-specific seasons, like a Cam Newton, like Johnny Manziel, these guys that have these electric one-and-done. But that might be part of the problem with Joe Burrow. Like, did we only see him? I mean, you look at the guy, you know, Chase, the wide receiver he has, Justin Jefferson. Those are two first-round guys. Jamar Chase might be the top wide receiver taken next year. You look at the guys he had around him. You have Joe Brady as your offensive coordinator. If he goes to the Bengals, I mean, the situation that he's going to be in might be, you know, worse off than it was at LSU. There was a lot of studs on that team around him. Do I think he can make it work? Do I think he can carry a team? We've seen this guy, the type of leader he is, the stories that come out about him from people, all great stuff. I think he's really fantastic. But what kind of, you know, makes me think that this guy is worthy of the first overall pick, Q, is, you know, the ability to move within the pocket. He has this kind of veteran approach. I mean, the guy can really read defenses, pick his spots, and let it rip. I mean, I think that I like the way that this guy kind of handles an offense. But where, you know, is AJ Green and what he's going to be surrounded in Cincinnati, if that's where he ends up landing, is that going to be enough? That's the question mark, is how big of a gap, how easy was it at LSU for him, where in the NFL it's going to be difficult no matter really where he lands that first game.
Speaking of weapons, the wide receivers are always weapons. In this draft, this 2020 draft, very, very deep. Obviously, there's three guys that have really separated themselves. Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Henry Ruggs. You can put them in whatever order you want to put them in. But as far as those three guys goes, who is your 1A and 1B out of those three?
Yeah, man, I think that's a question on everybody's thinking about right now. If we were having this conversation, you know, a couple months back, I probably would have told you Jerry Jeudy immediately. I mean, I've been a big proponent of Jeudy, it seems like, since last year. I've been really interested in this guy's game, the footwork, the route running, his ability, you know, take a slant to the crib with ease is very interesting. I think this guy's going to be a stud. But the guy growing on me that I wouldn't say I didn't expect, but I love Henry Ruggs, man. I think that I haven't necessarily ranked out my receivers yet. I think those three are definitely the top. But I think Henry Ruggs might be that number one guy for me when it's all said and done. I think what he can bring to an offense, and specifically if we're going to dive into the Raiders, I think he's, you know, a guy that's going to be very, very interesting for them, because I think he does so many things that, yeah, he's fast. He's a speedy threat. But he's a pretty darn good, well-rounded receiver across the board. And then that speed factor, what it brings to an offense, I think is going to open so many things up. It's going to open things up for a tight end. It's going to open up the underneath. You know, it's going to open up the run game. I think he brings such a large factor to an offense that, you know, Tyreek Hill, guys like that, that we can't even really quantify, that we're just going to have to see on the field because that speed is so, so nasty.
Talking right now with Tommy Call 3 writes and is on air at 95.7 The Game in the Bay on Twitter at Tommy_3. And you mentioned Henry Ruggs III. You mentioned how he could be a factor for the Raiders. If you had him on that roster, if you were the offensive coordinator, obviously that's John Gruden, but how would you use him in John Gruden's offense if that was the guy you had?
Yeah, I mean, I would try my best to make him a focal point. I mean, I think that because of, you look at who the guys are on the Raiders roster, right? I mean, I know they just brought in Nelson Aguilar, take that for what it is. Tyrell Williams, he's up and down, but then two guys that really stand out to me that are pretty talented for the Raiders right now is Hunter Renfro and Darren Waller. I mean, I think that these guys are, I think he would only make Waller's game better. If you want to turn Waller into the main, you know, weapon in the offense, I think Henry Ruggs helps that, because anytime Ruggs steps on the field, he's going to be a threat, even if it's running the game, you know, running with Josh Jacobs. I think that wherever he is on the field, he's that ultimate chess piece, that ultimate weapon, where he, to me, I think he can play a little bit inside, a little bit outside. But look at the AFC West, right? Look at the Chiefs. If you're the Las Vegas Raiders, I'm sure I'm going to say that a lot. But if you're the Raiders, you have to mirror the Chiefs, what they do. They have to be the team you're trying to take out. That needs to be the priority. And what do they kill you with is that speed. I mean, we saw it, you know, in the regular season of the Super Bowl forever now. That speed is such a threat. Tyreek Hill, what he does when he steps on the field, it makes everybody's heartbeat a little faster. Henry Ruggs can bring that element to Las Vegas if he arrives there. And I think that would just be that weapon to, I think, you know, we've talked a lot, right? And the ability to stretch the football down the field, to have a deep threat for the Oakland Raiders, to have Derek Carr take those chances, has always kind of been a problem for most Raider fans. It's like, we want to see him rip it down the field. Well, if you draft Ruggs early in the first round, you almost have to. You have to give him those chances. So bringing a guy like that to the offense forces all those things that Raiders fans have been banging the table for.
Let me ask you this, because this has been brought up a bunch of times to me, that a lot of wide receivers drafted in the first round don't pan out. Matter of fact, the last one to really pan out was Amari Cooper. So are you concerned at all with the wide receiver first round jinx that has been going on the past few seasons?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think that's something that, you know, us people that are so focused on the draft, we forget about those types of things. I would say this class, it's just so dangerous. There's so many studs where you're going to get guys that, you know, probably should be drafted in the first round as a wide receiver in many drafts, but are going to fall to later in this specific draft because there's so many studs. I mean, we've mentioned the top three guys, but right after that, I mean, we haven't even talked about Chenault, Justin Jefferson. There's a lot of studs right after those top three that in any draft class would probably be argued to be worthy of a first round draft pick. So this draft to me, I'm not really thinking that. I mean, I think that Judy, Ruggs, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, these guys have the ability to contribute right away. I mean, these are refined prospects. Like, you're not taking them for, you know, a specific way. Like, hey, this guy ran a 4.2. We're going to draft him just because of that. This guy can run a slant. We're going to draft him just because he can, you know, bring that element to the offense. These guys can do a little bit of everything and fit so many modern offenses. You have your big spot receivers. You have your outside guys. We've talked about the speed threats. I mean, this wide receiver class is as elite as everybody is talking about. It's really worthy of the hype. And I think that we're going to see, you know, in a couple years from now, we're going to look back at the 2020 draft class and be like, man, all those guys were in that same group. All those guys are drafted in that same draft. It's going to be this draft with the wide receivers.
You know, I got to ask about a guy that we've talked about multiple times well before the NFL draft. I mean, really, probably a couple seasons out, and that's Denzel Mims from Baylor. What are your thoughts on Mims now? He's really been climbing the charts. Looks like he could potentially be a later first-round dude himself.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I think, you know, I remember the last time I came on, we talked about Mims. This is a guy that's worthy to be getting that type of buzz. And I was out there in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl when he really showed out. And I think by the coaching staff there, by the people in the stands, they wanted to see him do a little bit of everything, right? Like, we know his ability to go up and get the football. We know about the speed. We know about all those things. But then you put that, you know, where he's being challenged by other great corners. I mean, the wide receiver class is great. The corner class is good, too. A lot of those guys are out in Mobile. There was a real battle between the wide receivers and DBs. I was glued to it, you know, out there on the sideline. And Mims was a guy to me that stuck out above the rest, that every time he was on the field, and that's what these scouts go there to see. Like, everybody out there on that field is an all-star. They're all there for a specific reason, but you want to see the alphas, right? You want to see the guys that separate themselves amongst other, you know, great prospects. And Mims kept doing that time and time again. And I think, you know, we talked about having a role in an offense. I think Mims, he has that with just his, the ability to go up and get the football in the red zone, be a red zone threat every time you step on the field. I want to just, you know, throw some fade your way one-on-one and go get the football. And I think Mims can do that right now for any NFL team that takes them. And to me, he's definitely going to get a first round grade. I mean, I've been a fan of his game for a little while now, and to kind of see it all come together from the Senior Bowl to what he did at the combine. I mean, I think this guy's really planted himself as a first round draft pick.
I think he really has, for every reason that you just mentioned. But you shot me a text earlier talking about his college teammate, his running back, Jamichael Hasty, and that you're a fan of Hasty. What is it about Jamichael, J. Mike, that stands out to you?
Yeah, so I was actually at the Senior Bowl. A friend of mine, you know, a great Raiders follow, Mark John on Twitter, a friend of mine, he was watching him thinking, yeah, I really like this guy. I think this guy is kind of falling through the cracks in the running back class, because there's some stud running backs in this game. But I think Hasty, what he brings is in the seventh round, you know, later in the draft, if he's available late, I think he brings kind of a unique change of pace. Like, I think that's going to be the thing that stuck to him. But what I really like about him is, what we love about, I think, like, modern NFL running backs is patience. Le'Veon Bell really kind of put that on display when he was at Pittsburgh. The ability to kind of read the hole and then hit it. Hasty has that right now. Like, the guy's patience to me is fantastic, and he has that cut ability where the acceleration cue, I mean, I don't have to tell you, I know you probably saw it at Baylor, but that acceleration is nasty. And it's like, he is going to be faced with really elite caliber fast defensive players at the next level, where I think you're going to be able to hang with them, and you put him in a position where, yeah, he's probably going to play third down. He's probably going to get a handful of snaps a game. But you're going to see, you know, the fantasy players out there, I think later in the season, are going to be adding Hasty, because he just brings that element of just nasty acceleration through the hole, where we're not necessarily talking about speed or anything, but the ability to kind of be patient, find that hole and hit it, right? And that adds up to, you know, getting tackled in the secondary, 6-7 yard carries, things like that. I think Hasty is that guy that not a lot of people are paying attention to right now.
No, really, he's really flying under the radar. And I'll tell you right now that he was a guy that was very frustrating for a long time, for a few years. His first few years at Baylor, he was very frustrating because he looked like he danced too much. You talked about patience, but it looked like he was almost overpatient. He'd do a lot of dancing.
Yeah,
his last year, yeah, man, his last year under Matt Rhule, he really improved in a major way. And I saw him hitting those holes like you're mentioning. So I do think he's got a role. But you've seen him and you feel like he's really improved, huh?
Yeah, I know. I'm a fan, and he got pointed out to me by another, you know, really smart draft mind out there, my buddy Mark. And this guy, I saw it at the Senior Bowl, and you know, running backs at the Senior Bowl and things like that, and running backs really in any of these types of drills is always kind of weird. Like how much are they really going to show off themselves? But then you flip on the games and you flip on the tape, and you start to say, wow, this guy has a little bit of kind of vet like savvy as a runner. And it doesn't surprise me that you say he would be frustrating to fans early on in his career, but that growth, right? That's what you want to see. And then now you hopefully with an NFL coaching staff and a defined role at the next level that he could probably continue to improve upon.
So that was just part one of my conversation right there with Tommy Call 3 from 95.7 The Game in the Bay, talking all things NFL draft. Like to scatter shoot with him and talk about even a little bit of other teams and what they could possibly do, just because want to see what kind of names he's talking about, what different positions, what spot on the board he's talking about. And so, yeah, just kind of like I said, scatter shooting with Tommy, and we like to talk NFL draft. We usually do it 2 or 3 times a year, so definitely appreciate him. But he's not done. He's coming up in segment number 3 to close things out. A lot of good conversation still to come with Tommy Call 3 from 95.7 The Game in the Bay, right here on the Locked On Raiders podcast.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, so Raider Nation, here we are, segment number 3 of today's Locked On Raiders podcast on this Friday, trying to finish off the week really, really strong, and I feel like we're doing that, especially with this interview, with this conversation that I had with Tommy Call 3 from 95.7 The Game. So let's go ahead and jump right into part number 2 of this conversation, of my conversation with Tommy Call 3 from 95.7 The Game. The defensive back class, man. The guys that have first rounders. Obviously, Jeffrey Okuda, he's a clear-cut number one dude. After him, as far as first-round dudes, C.J. Henderson, he's been in the mix. Christian Fulton, A.J. Terrell. I actually penciled him in my mock draft at number 19 for the Raiders. Trevon Diggs from Alabama. As far as first-round guys outside of Okuda, who are you looking at?
Yeah, I think one thing I will say, and I know we've talked about this before, I think secondary and scouting corners is so difficult because these guys, you know, it's a tough position to play, and I think it's a tough position to project. That being said, Okuda, you know, this guy's at the top for a reason. After that, yeah, Christian Fulton, those guys that you mentioned, those are all really interesting players, but where this corner class specifically stands out to me is kind of in the meat of it is when you get into the second to fourth rounds. I mean, I think guys like Jalen Johnson out of Utah,
okay,
becoming one of my favorite players, one of those guys that I stamp like a my guy next to that. If I'm in a war room, I'm kind of banging the table for a Jalen Johnson. I really like Damon Arnett out of Ohio State. I think what this guy brings, you know, he could probably play in the slide. He's a really attitude driven player. Same with Johnson. These guys have that little bit of swagger to their game. And then beyond that, I mean, I like Cam Dantzler out of Mississippi State. I like Troy Pride a lot out of Notre Dame. I think that's going to be a guy that is going to kind of, he's not getting that top 50 billing, but once he, you know, I think wherever he lands, you're going to see him contribute in year one. I think there's a lot of guys in that middle round, in those, like that 2 to 4 rounds is that sweet spot. But I think you're going to be kind of picking between if the Raiders or whatever team decides to take a corner in the first round, you're really going to have to find your guy between a C.J. Henderson, Christian Fulton, Gladney, guys like that. But after that, I think is where you're really going to find some contributors, whether that's a guy that, you know, gives you X amount of snaps a game or a starter with that second to fourth round with the guys I had mentioned.
Jalen Johnson, you mentioned him, and he has been getting a lot of love, but noticing him more and more each and every day as we get a little bit closer and closer to the NFL draft. What is it about Johnson that stands out to you that you like the most?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's just, there's something about, you know, these guys that are pro corners that you see at the next level. You see these guys that play a little bit of grit to their game, that's not afraid to necessarily punch another guy in the mouth, right? That brings that football swagger to the team. I think that's who Jalen Johnson is. I think he has the athleticism, the quickness, those types of things are there. And this guy wants the football, right? Like, this guy wants to be the guy that other teams fear. I think he brings that to the table. And I want a guy like that on my team. You read some of the interviews, you talk to some people about Jalen Johnson, it's always about this kind of alpha mentality. And I think at the next level with a corner, you need that.
What about the safeties? Sticking with the secondary, the safeties in the first round, I'm looking at Grant Delpit out of LSU. I'm looking at Xavier McKinney out of Alabama. Is there a guy that I'm missing in safety that you think could go in the first round that's not one of those two guys?
Yeah, so you might have missed maybe one of my favorite players in the draft, and that's Antoine Winfield Jr.
Okay.
out of Minnesota. I mean,
okay.
this guy's a stud. This guy's a guy that I would, you know, I hope my favorite team in the NFL draft. I hope that I'm rooting for him in his career. I think we talked about the swagger and things like that. That guy has it, but just playmaking ability as a DB. And he reminds me of, you know, the Honey Badger, a guy that's just always around the football, a ball hawk where the ball is just glued to him wherever he goes. He makes the improbable interception time and time again. His instincts are just incredible. And also it's because he's smart. You know, he can play safety, he can play in the box, he has the speed to play back deep. I mean, he can cover a guy out of the slot, he can bang inside. I mean, he does a little bit of everything that is just you want on your team. That is just like, it wouldn't surprise me if this guy wins a couple Super Bowls in his career because he's just a winner. He's just one of those guys that helps you win at the next level, and that's Antoine Winfield. I mean, I'm really, really impressed with him. You flip on his film, you go to YouTube, type in an Antoine Winfield highlight reel, you'll fall in love with the guy. Any football fan, any guy that's just a football guy, I think loves Antoine Winfield's game.
You know, it's funny, I did miss him, and he has been getting a lot of hype as well. Obviously, he's got the, you know, he's got football pedigree in his genes with his father being in the NFL for quite a while. What about Jeremy Chinn out of Southern Illinois? He's a guy, in my opinion, who, one, had a heck of a career at Southern Illinois, but was not on my radar until the combine, and then all of a sudden, I had to go back and say, wait a minute, let me check this dude out. And I mean, he's been my guy. Safety, Jeremy Chinn, I think he's a second, maybe early third round guy, late, you know, late second, early third, but I have a feeling that his stock is going real, real high.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see kind of how he's used and what he's played at, because at, you know, at Southern Illinois, he was, I think, used all over the field. There was a ton of responsibility on Jeremy Chin's plate. What I really like about him is the size. Man, this guy looks like a monster out there on the field. You look at him like, how did he not go to an Ohio State or an Alabama or something like that? Because he just looks to me like a physical specimen. I think that, you know, I think you kind of nailed it on the head there with where his range is. I think somebody's going to get lucky in that second or third round with finding just a football player. You know, one thing that stands out to me when we talk about the draft time and time again, I think we get so caught up in projection, right? It's always about how does this guy project? He has a lot of potential. He has a lot of upside. Those words are thrown around a ton, where sometimes we miss on just drafting good football players, right? Bringing in a guy was productive at the college level, probably because he was a really good college football player. Does that mean he's going to be a really good pro player? Maybe, but at the end of the day, this guy has the acumen, right? This guy has the acumen of being labeled a good college player. There's no projection, things like that, where I like those guys. I like the guys that have proof in the pudding to an extent. I think Chin has that. I mean, he really contributed to a team at multiple levels, was asked to play all over the field and excelled at it. And I get it wasn't at, you know, the top level like we're talking about, but I still think that this guy has some intrigue for sure. But have you got to see, you know, speaking of small school guys at the safety position, I got to talk to him out there in Alabama. Kyle Duggar out of Lenoir Ryan, a D2 guy. That's a guy that I think is going to, you know, make some plays on Sunday. You're going to see this guy, like, how did he go D2? I went to a D2 college. Got to love the D2 guys out there. And this guy has a legitimate shot to be drafted, you know, early second round, maybe, you know, third round, I think at latest is for Duggar. I mean, this is a guy that really showed out, like we talked about with Mims at the Senior Bowl. I think he's a really interesting name to pay attention to with the safety class.
Yeah, no, I have. His name has come up a few times. I had a couple people hit me up and ask about him, so I'm glad you brought him up. Right now I'm talking to Tommy Call 3. We're talking all things NFL draft. I got a couple questions because everyone has a mock draft. I have one, you have one, everyone has a mock draft. I want to go and ask you a couple teams, just going to scatter shoot with a couple teams, and you tell me who you think the best pick at that position would be for that team, if that's cool.
Oh, okay, let's do it.
All right, well, the Bengals at one, I think everyone assumes that they're going to go Joe Burrow. So what do you think the Redskins do following number one? What do you think they do at number two?
Yeah, I mean, I think Chase Young has to be the pick, right? I wouldn't look at their team and go, man, they desperately need an edge rusher. I mean, they picked, you know, obviously Sweat last year as a guy, but, you know, the argument I would make against Chase Young, I think this guy is worthy of being considered the number one player in the draft. I think the people that want to question him, it's because of draft fatigue. He's similar to Nick Bosa. He's that guy that, you know, been pictured in every mock draft for, it seems like, months now. That's all for a reason. He is that good. But when it comes to specifically the Redskins, without having Trent Williams, they need some help for Haskins. If you're ever going to, you know, give this guy a serious shot to develop, he needs to be protected. So if that's your guy, why not necessarily make the argument? Like I said, I still think it's Chase, but make the argument maybe for an offensive lineman, but it still seems early at two.
Do you think that Haskins is the guy for sure? Is there any chance that they may pull a rabbit out the hat and go and get a quarterback like Tua?
Man, it wouldn't shock me. Surprise, yes, but would I be just absolutely, you know, out of wins? No, because we can obviously, with what Arizona did last year with grabbing Kyler Murray and having just some success with it, you know, they don't, you know, the new coaching staff there, if they don't believe Haskins is the guy, I think Tua is worth, you know, drafting that pick. And even if maybe Tua's health doesn't work out, you have Haskins and you can't flip him. But I still think, you know, a team that's high on him, you could probably net at least a second rounder for Haskins right away. If that's the route they do decide. But I still think it's probably going to be Chase Young. I don't think Ron Rivera really passes on that guy specifically.
Yeah, I don't either. I think Chase Young makes all the sense. I think it's intriguing with the whole, like, Arizona, like you mentioned, what they did last season, trading Josh Rosen, going and getting Kyler Murray. Just don't know if the Redskins are 100% sold on Haskins. What about the Panthers? What do you think the Panthers do? Matt Rhule. You know I'm a big Matt Rhule guy. He takes over the head coaching job there. Some guys have been shipped out already. I mean, obviously it's going to be a long rebuild. What do you think they do at number seven overall?
Man, I don't think he's going to fall this far, but I think Isaiah Simmons to me, that's got to be a dream situation pick for them. I mean, this guy is like the weapon X when it comes to football. The ability to play seems like every single position on, you know, this guy. You got to see him in the college football playoffs. You got to see him at Clemson now for years, and kind of wondering how he would fit in the NFL. He fits everywhere. The guy can do a little bit of everything. I mean, he's right there with Chase Young, being as billed as one of the better players in the draft. I don't think he necessarily falls to the Panthers at seven, but I mean, if he's not, the thing that is interesting to me, and this is a shot out of the cannon here, is Jordan Love. I mean, I love Jordan Love's game. I'm really high. I'm one of the people out there that's been, I think that this guy projects to be a pretty entertaining, interesting quarterback. I mean, I like what he does. I love his throwing motion. I think this guy can rip the football across the field. I don't know if that's the route they decide to take, if they're all in for a Trevor Lawrence next year, if they're kind of setting up the long-term rebuild. Jordan Love, you're kind of putting a lot of pressure on the guy, but he could use a year on the bench behind a Teddy Bridgewater. He could pair up with Matt Rhule and learn that offense like the back of his hand and really be that quarterback prodigy for him, because he has all the potential in the world.
That's a good thought right there. I thought Isaiah Simmons, but I didn't think Jordan Love. But yeah, man, you really piqued my interest with that one. All right, well, let me ask you this: where does the run on wide receivers start? Where do you think the run on wide receivers start, and who's that team that starts it off?
Man, it could be. I think it's going to be interesting, obviously, whenever the Raiders and the 49ers are picking back-to-back like they're going to be in this draft. I mean, I think that's really the area where you start to see names like Judy and CeeDee Lamb. But, I mean, it would not shock me at all if Henry Ruggs goes really early. I mean, I think that we continue to sleep on speed every single year. We're always surprised by a guy that, you know, is billed as the fastest receiver in the class. I think it's, I wouldn't say overdrafted, but definitely gets bumped up the board a little bit. The NFL loves speed, and that's what Ruggs brings to the table. So it wouldn't surprise me if you see this guy go in that 7, 8, 9 range. A team trades up for him to try and get him. But then I think teams are going to be willing to not wait on a Jerry Jeudy or a CeeDee Lamb or something like that, but those guys will start to fall off the board maybe right there outside the top 10.
So it's safe to say that if the Raiders are on the board at number 12 and Henry Ruggs is available, that's who you're penciling in there at that spot.
It is, 100%. I think that just seems like a match made in heaven, personally. Like what I said, that's one of those fits that you go, yeah, that makes 100%. There's no questions asked. I don't even really have to think about that one on a mock draft. It just seems too good to be true, but with that, with the Raiders and drafting and everything that comes into it, it seems we're in a situation where, do they actually get there? Do they have to maybe move up to get him if he is that highly on their specific board? I don't know if he'll be there at 12.
What do you think about the Cowboys? What do you think they do at number 17? They finally got a first-round draft pick. They didn't have one last year, but they got one this year.
What happened with, you know, guys leaving there? You know, Byron Jones really hurt them leaving. I think in free agency, you look across their team and you go, I feel like we're going to load up on offense. We're going to have McCarthy. We're going to get Dak some help, and we're going to try and just kind of take over offense, and we're going to deduct a little from defense. So with that being said, it wouldn't surprise me if they go for corner, but I don't think you're replacing Byron Jones, one of the better corners in the league, with whoever you're going to take at 17. A guy that I know is mocked to them often, a guy that I think is very interested in, that I'm really high on, is Chase Young out of LSU. I think this guy is not Chase Young elite, but I mean, he is very, very good. I think, and he has a lot of potential, right? I think this guy hasn't really hit that peak of his game where he's not a refined prospect, where I think the longer he plays in the league, he's going to get better and better. And I think if he kind of falls to the Cowboys, you put him across the line where DeMarcus Lawrence, and now you have a nasty pass rush where that can maybe help out a young secondary.
All right, I got to ask you about number 19. I penciled in A.J. Terrell, defensive back out of Clemson for the Raiders for their second first-round pick. But who do you think is a good choice at number 19?
You know, for the Raiders, I understand that you have Jonathan Abram. And like I said, I'm infatuated with Antoine Winfield's game. If I'm doing a mock draft, I think a team like the Raiders, who have a little bit of necessarily a luxury to go up and grab a guy like that. I mean, I think if you're talking about strictly football players, Antoine Winfield is one of the better in this draft class. And I think that you use him with the Raiders, where he is that guy that can play all these different positions for them, you know, whether that's guarding guys in the slot to dropping back deep. I think Winfield, that's the guy I would like to see them pick because I think he is that talented of a player. But then this side of me too goes, I feel like every time you and I talk to you, and I understand the Raiders spent money in free agency on linebacker, but they just need that Oakland Raiders linebacker. It seems like for years now they've craved a middle linebacker, and you have two guys with Patrick Queen and Kenneth Murray who probably will be available around 19. And after that, the linebacking, class dries up a little bit. So if they have that pick similar to, you know, we're talking about luxuries on defense, adding a guy that can help them defensively right away, if they take a wide receiver at 12, I think they have to take a good hard look at Kenneth Murray and just go, this is going to be kind of the face of the Las Vegas Raiders defense for years to come. It's Patrick Queen, one of those two guys. Those guys definitely interest me at 19 for the Oakland Raiders.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised either. He really reminds me of a Mayock and Gruden type guy. Like, they would really love the dude that he is, alpha dog mentality, leadership. I mean, all that stuff that he's got. I could totally see him. I've been saying it for days. I wouldn't be shocked to see them go and draft him just because he could be their guy and they could build that defense around him for years to come, even though, like you mentioned, they did pick up those linebackers in free agency. My final question for you, and I saved this one for last. I know you were at the Senior Bowl, so I'm sure that you were able to see this guy up close and personal, and I know there's a lot of feelings. Some people think he's good. Some people think he's trash. Whatever, it's all good. What is your thoughts on Jalen Hurts, quarterback from, well, Alabama and Oklahoma?
Yeah, I think Hurts, man, he is definitely one of those polarizing prospects. And a lot of people, I would not go anywhere close to say he's trash. I think that at first the buzz was so hot that he's getting this first round buzz. And what he did at the college level, I think, gives him that ability. But I don't know if a team gives him the keys because that's a ton of pressure on him for his skills. It wouldn't surprise me if he carries a team. If he is the backup at first, the starter goes down, he takes over, and then that becomes his team for the next couple years. And it wouldn't even surprise me if he carries them to the playoffs. I think he is a guy that is going to continue to get better, right? I mean, the more he's around this pro-style offense, we saw him with Lincoln Riley. The deep ball got better. The reads got better. And then he does what he does with his legs. I just don't know, like, the value there, right? Like, are you drafting him as a starter right now?
Right.
Or are you drafting him as a backup? You know, that's the question mark. Because I don't think, you know, the first round pick is necessarily in question anymore. But where he goes after that, that's going to be the interesting factor. I mean, where he lands is going to be so important. If he, you know, gets drafted to one of these playoff caliber teams and he's around this good culture right away and he's able to learn and continue to kind of add juice to that potential, be around these other, because he's very smart. He's a very talented, you know, human. You learn about all these things, the stuff he brings to the locker room, who he is as a leader, all those things. But people say those things for a reason, right? If he brings that mentality as, you know, a guy with a clipboard to start his career, I think that gives him, you know, sets him up for success later on. If you give him the keys right away, put a ton of your pressure, label him your franchise guy, we spent this high draft pick on you, you're going to, you know, change our franchise. That's where I see, I don't know if he's there yet. And that's not necessarily a knock on him.
Right.
I just think it depends on value and landing spot with him, where that's going to determine his success.
I'll tell you right now, I floated out the idea, and I floated it out there a long time ago during the regular season in 2019. I think that the Raiders would be smart to go get him if they can get him a little bit later in the draft and let him sit behind Carr. And with his work ethic and with the way that John Gruden likes to coach, I think that they would coach him hard. He would bust his tail to learn, and at some point be able to take over the keys to John Gruden and his offense. I think he'd be a perfect fit with the Raiders at some point, but like you said, not right away.
He does kind of seem like a Gruden guy to an extent, right? Like, he seems like he has those traits that I feel like Gruden would really like. If Gruden was a broadcaster right now, even Mike Mayock to that extent, those things that we've kind of learned to label Gruden, Mayock guys as, I think Jalen Hurts has a little bit of that to his game.
Yeah, I do too. I really do, and I've been talking about him and hyping him up a lot. Raider Nation is tired of me talking about him, but it's all good. I'm gonna ride that out. That's my guy, Tommy Call 3. He writes. He's on the air at 95.7 The Game. Does a lot of stuff in the Bay. A lot of work, man. Is all over the NFL draft like a glove. You can find him on Twitter at Tommy_3. You got anything coming up that people should be on the lookout for, or when are you on the air so people could tune in and check you out?
Yeah, we're just grinding, man. We're doing a lot of draft stuff. I have a draft pod where I spend a lot of time interviewing a lot of prospects. Did one with Cincinnati's tight end, Josiah DeGuerra, really talented, one of those gritty football guys that I mentioned early in the pod. That's a guy that we spent some time with. Got a couple other interviews lined up here. Hopefully, once all this craziness settles down a little bit, we can get back to a full court press as the draft's coming up, man. But I'm excited, man. I can't wait for the draft. It takes our minds off a little bit of the craziness that's going on in the world right now, for sure.
No doubt about it, man. It's great stuff as always. I love catching up with you. Anytime we do, I always tell you I'm gonna get you about 10 to 15 minutes. I end up keeping you 45 minutes. So I always appreciate
you.
I appreciate your time as always, man. It's a lot of great stuff, and I'll definitely be on the lookout for everything you do and make sure to keep plugging it out there for you as well. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, man. Everybody out there listening, please stay safe, man. Everybody out there, stay safe. Appreciate it.
All right, so that's a done deal right there. Hopefully you enjoyed that. Hopefully you enjoyed this week. And, man, we're getting a little bit closer and a little bit closer and a little bit closer to the NFL draft. And I know we've been very draft heavy here on the Locked On Raiders podcast, but that's what time it is, man. It's get the team better's time. It's time for the Raiders to stand up and really put together a really good product to put on the field in 2020. And I think that they're going to have that opportunity to do it. And they've done a lot in free agency, but they have to continue to do that in the draft, and that's coming up April 23rd through 25th, and I'm very excited to see what direction they go. So many thanks to Tommy Call the Third. Coming up on Monday, we'll get back to some calls and texts and tweets off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line, 707-654-4693, and also, like I said, tweets at your boy Q254. You can hit me up anytime you want. So until then, Raider Nation, enjoy your weekend, stay safe, love on your family, hang out with your family, do what you got to do. We'll be back talking Raiders on Monday here on the Locked On Raiders podcast. Until then, as always, just win, baby.